Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
What is going on, guys and girls? Welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter, and today we're going to talk about the SmackDown that aired on December 11th, 2020. This episode of SmackDown actually was the complete opposite of last week. As far as last week, I mentioned that it went by pretty fast. That was not the case this week. It seemed like this SmackDown kind of drug on and took a long time to end. Again, that could just be me. It could have been completely different for you watching SmackDown, but for some reason, this one just was not as fast as last week and seemed like it drug on throughout the night. But again, guys, welcome to the SmackDown review. Glad that you guys chose to listen today. Unfortunately, I will not have a top five at the end of this episode. I do apologize for that. I actually have a wedding to go to tomorrow. As you guys know, I do these podcasts following SmackDown. So usually later in the night, closer to 11:30 midnight. It usually just varies on what all happens that Friday night when I actually do start SmackDown. But in this case, like I said, I have a wedding to go to tomorrow. So for time purposes, I probably will not be able to get you guys a top five this week, but I will certainly make up for it. But speaking of top five, I actually got a little bit of feedback from my top five last week, and it was about a song that I left off of the top five, and I'm pretty sure that multiple people probably thought the same thing whenever they saw that the song wasn't on there at all, and that is Stone Cold's theme song. And I totally understand why people would ask why I left that one off there. I actually did plan on referencing it. I didn't plan on putting it in the top five. I'm not going to say that, but I did plan on referencing it because I knew that it is a popular song and that people would probably wonder where it was, but it did slip my mind. So as far as that song goes, it's obviously a great song. I mean, I love hearing the glass break just as much as anybody else, because obviously that means that Stone Cold is coming out. So obviously that is a great song. But if you're just talking about the songs themselves just in a vacuum, I don't feel like it was necessarily as great as some of the other songs, especially some of the ones that I did put in the list. I mean, you can argue Kane's and RVD's for sure. I feel like the top three are pretty solid, at least, like I said, in my subjective list. So everybody else's is probably different, but I definitely know that I probably should have referenced that, at least an honorable mention, because that song, as well as The Rock's and, you know, several others that are, you know, pretty popular throughout the WWE fans. But I love the feedback. I love you guys are telling me what you thought about it and what you would do differently. That's why I'm doing that, and that's what I'm going to continue to do. I actually got some suggestions from some listeners on some future top fives that I might end up doing, so that's always good. I can never have too many of those. We're going to have a lot of time to fill here as these weeks come on, so if there is a top five that you guys want to hear, let me know, and we can definitely make that happen. But we are here for the SmackDown review, and that is what we're going to get into. And tonight's episode of SmackDown actually started with a contract signing between Sasha and Carmella. And this contract signing begins with only Sasha and Adam Pearce in the ring. And Adam Pearce was basically fixing his lips to introduce Carmella to come out, and Sasha is attempting to sign the contract while he's doing that. But she notices that the actual contract isn't inside the little black briefcase that they usually come in for all those things. So she begins to question Adam Pearce and accuses Carmella of trying to set her up. But before she could say much more, Carmella actually appears on the Jumbotron with the contract that she claims to have already signed, and she has it hand-delivered to Sasha in the ring. And they kind of go back and forth, although it wasn't quite as good as their exchange last week. Carmella had somebody who I actually have not seen before. They eventually said his name was Tommy or something. There was something that she was calling him. I can't exactly remember what it was called. But she has him deliver the contract to Sasha Banks in the ring. I'm assuming that he is an enhancement talent because he does end up getting slapped in the face and hit with a backstabber after Sasha signs the contract. But I noticed whenever she did sign it, she actually pulls out a custom signature stamp to sign it. I don't think that I've seen that before in WWE, or at least anything that I can remember off the top of my head. So I just thought that was kind of cool that she did that. But before she attacked the enhancement talent, she does get impatient and tells Carmella that their match doesn't have to take place at TLC and that they can do it tonight. And with Adam Pearce already being present in the ring, the match is made official on the spot for tonight's main event. And I actually did predict this a couple weeks ago. I said that WWE would probably get impatient with this and give it to us a little bit early. Now, obviously, that's not like I'm the first person to think that. Everybody knows that WWE likes to give away these championship matches on SmackDown and Raw just all the time. And that is certainly the case here, but this is not the last that we see of these two women. Obviously, they have their match at the main event, so we will get a little bit more into that later. But right here, we have a backstage interview with Caleb Braxton and the Street Profits. This one we really didn't get too much out of. I mean, she does ask the Street Profits about the comments made by Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode claiming that the Street Profits are too funny to make money and if that could affect their reputations as competitors. And following that, we get a match with Ziggler and Montez Ford. Their response to Caleb Braxton really wasn't anything too noteworthy. I'm pretty sure it was a bunch of things that they've said before as far as addressing opponents that they're about to face and being doubted by those specific opponents. But like I said, we get Dolph Ziggler and Montez Ford here one-on-one. And Ziggler comes out and cuts a, you know, pretty decent heel promo before the match. Ziggler and Roode seem like a legit threat to take the tag team championships off of the Street Profits. But this one-on-one match between Ziggler and Montez Ford, it was definitely an entertaining match between the two better wrestlers from their respective teams, although that could probably be debated with the Ziggler and Roode team. We obviously see a lot more Dolph Ziggler than we do Robert Roode, so it's kind of hard to judge based on sample size. But we're all pretty comfortable with saying that Dolph Ziggler is one of the best workers in the ring or in the WWE today, and he can certainly make a wrestler like Montez Ford look like $1 million. But Ford does have an absolutely beautiful standing drop kick in this match. It's reminiscent of a young Randy Orton. Definitely caught my eye. I had to rewind it and watch it again. It was actually pretty impressive. But in the middle of this match is where it kind of gets weird. Robert Roode and Angelo Dawkins both enter the ring and nearly interfere, but they don't. The Street Profits actually chase the others out of the ring, and then suddenly their entrance music hits and a bunch of solo cups kind of start falling from the ceiling. I was really confused by this for a second, but they go to commercial break, and whenever they come back from commercial break, everything was basically normal, like that never happened. So I don't really know if that was WWE just trying to really hit the old, I'm trying to think of exactly how to word it, but basically, I don't know if that was WWE trying to enhance their segues into commercial breaks. I mean, we've all talked about how they like to make it very obvious when they're going to commercial breaks. This kind of seemed like they were doing something else, but whenever I realized they were going to a commercial break, I kind of, that thought crossed my mind, like, are they really going to start doing things like this to go to commercial break? But that could be just me watching SmackDown really late and letting my tired mind create a bunch of random things that aren't likely. But anyway, Robert Roode ends up attacking Angelo Dawkins from behind and throwing him into the steps to cause a distraction to Montez Ford as he was standing on the top turnbuckle. Dolph hits the ropes when Ford wasn't looking, making him slip off the turnbuckle and ultimately take a low blow, which led to a super kick to secure Dolph Ziggler the win. As far as the Street Profits go, I am all for them having a long title run as long as they're defending the championships in the ring. That's actually the one championship that I wouldn't mind being defended on SmackDown or free TV every week if it meant that we get some consistent in-ring work from the tag team champions instead of bearing the, those belts for majority of the year, which just seems like that's what happens. Now, granted, WWE is not necessarily deep when it comes to their tag team division on either show, so it's hard to have a huge variety of tag teams to choose from if you're looking to build programs. That's why it kind of makes more sense, although I do hate the whole cross-branded things. It does make sense to have one belt or one set of tag team belts for the entire company, not one for each show, even though I have seen that done successfully in the past. With how the roster is set up right now in today's WWE and how tag teams are viewed, it just doesn't really make sense to have two sets of male tag teams. I mean, like I said, if they're doing it right, then it's a great thing. But if not, then you see a bunch of tag teams get split up too soon. You see a bunch of random tag teams just kind of get thrown together just to kind of make something happen. Or the tag team belts just get completely neglected in general, which was what we've seen happen with the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders for God knows how long. But I do like the Street Profits' potential as a tag team. I feel like some things about their gimmick obviously are kind of polarizing. Either you love them or you hate them. I'm kind of right there in the middle. I know how talented they can be. Their gimmick doesn't necessarily bother me too much because, like I said, I'm not really too invested with what they have going on as a SmackDown, or I mean, not as a SmackDown, as a tag team division on SmackDown, sorry. So it's hard for me to really get upset with what's going on with the Street Profits whenever they really are one of the only true tag teams that are actually a team on the roster. So I would definitely like to see some more tag teams maybe stick together. I mean, you guys have all seen what's happened with tag teams just being split up way too soon. It's an obvious sign that Vince McMahon does not take the tag team division serious. And I just think that's a pretty big flaw in today's wrestling, because tag team wrestling has always been a pretty big part of wrestling on shows that have been pretty successful. And up next, we get some more backstage work from Sami Zayn. He is near the merchandise stand, that's big air quotes, the merchandise stand, with a handful of other wrestlers also in the area. But Sami is actually complaining to an employee about not having a signature shirt despite being the Intercontinental Champion. Big E walks up proudly flaunting and showing off his new shirt, which makes Sami get even more upset. And Big E says that merch should be the last thing on Sami's mind. Apollo Crews, who's one of the wrestlers standing there with Big E and a few others as Sami's complaining to the merchandise employee, Apollo actually pulls out a white t-shirt with a stick figure drawing on it that looked like it was drawn by a five-year-old with a permanent marker, but it said, "I am Sami Zayn." And Sami rips the shirt out of Apollo's hand, tries to tear it down the middle, but he isn't able to, so he just kind of throws it on the ground and walks away really pissed off. We go to commercial break, and then whenever we come back, Sami actually cuts a promo in the ring before the match, and he's continuing his rant about not having any merch, but he makes it clear that he doesn't want a t-shirt to contribute to the consumerism of WWE, but he wants it so his people around the world and every continent can show their Intercontinental Champion some respect. And this was another good match. I liked the Ziggler and Ford match as well, so I feel like SmackDown was 2 for 2 to start the night as far as good matches. These two guys have good chemistry in their respective roles as a heel and babyface. Not necessarily a good matchup on paper, but both of them know how to tell a story during a match, so they work well together. This one ended by Sami faking a wrist injury, which led to the official temporarily stopping the match to make sure Sami was okay. As the ref basically was holding Big E back, Sami slaps him in the face and begins to run from Big E around the ring and under the ring. And as Big E follows him under the ring, Sami comes out a different side and kicks Big E in the head about 5 or 6 times. to barely make it back inside the ring to beat the 10 count and pick up another victory via countout. There really wasn't much further development as far as the Big E Sami Zayn Intercontinental Championship picture goes. That is still what I expect to be on the card at TLC. So this didn't really do anything more for us. It kind of just kept us going, maybe advertise Big E's new shirt. That might have been the whole point of all this, but basically, you can just expect that at TLC, we will get some sort of gimmick match with Big E and Sami Zayn for the Intercontinental Championship. Up next, we get a backstage promo with Bayley, and she wishes good luck to Carmella before their match tonight, and says that even though Sasha is champion, Bayley still runs the division. And then she begins to address Bianca Belair, but is unaware that Bianca is actually standing right behind her. And then Bianca pulls out several receipts, which on the receipts are basically just things that Bayley hasn't done that Bianca has done in recent memory, such as Bianca beating Natalya and Bayley failing to do so last week. But this was a pretty quick segment. It was actually underwhelming, but I can appreciate a slower approach to this feud and not just completely forgetting about it. I mean, they could have not put it on TV at all. We've seen them do that before in the past. So for them to at least give us a little bit of something, I can appreciate. We'll see what happens next week, but that is still something that you know you can probably expect is Bayley versus Bianca Belair. But keeping things backstage, we get a Kayla Braxton and Carmella interview, but this is actually pretty small. I mean, the only reason why I'm mentioning it is because Carmella tells Tommy, I guess is his name, to bring champagne to ringside so she can celebrate properly, and that champagne does in fact come back into play later, so that's why I wanted to mention that. But next, as we keep it backstage, we get Roman and Paul Heyman shown backstage watching the video package of Roman attacking Jey Uso and Kevin Owens both last week. Jey walks up and asks if everything's good, and they kind of have an awkward exchange where Roman asks him if him and his kids are good. There really wasn't much to that, it was just kind of awkward. But as they're still watching the monitor, Kevin Owens' music hits, and they watch as he comes to the ring and starts throwing tables, a ladder, and chairs into the ring, picks up a mic, and tells Roman to listen closely. Kevin says that even after what happened last week, and even though Roman is better than he's ever been, he still does not fear him. He says that Roman has his family fighting for him, and that he's using his family to fight his battles. Kevin Owens then says that he also fights for his family, except his family supports him from home by watching on the television, so he'll have some friends help him at TLC, referring to tables, ladders, and chairs. He adds that Roman can be the head of the table, but at TLC, he's going to do everything in his power to get back to where he belongs, and that is at the top of the ladder. Jey Uso comes out and attacks Kevin before he could finish his promo, but Kevin quickly responds with chair shots and begins to put a beating on Jey Uso, eventually putting him through the table with a pop-up powerbomb. Roman Reigns' music hits, and he comes out to the top of the ramp. He tries to hand Paul the Universal Championship and head to the ring, but Paul Heyman begins an empathetic plea, listing several reasons why it doesn't make any sense for Roman to go down to the ring and give Kevin Owens what he wants. After Roman finally heads backstage, Owens starts to limp his way in that same direction with a steel chair, basically just going backstage to follow Roman. We go to a commercial break, but when we come back, Kevin Owens is Kayla Braxton is trying to, you know, get him to stop so she can get an interview with him. He does get a few words in, but in this interview, it actually ends pretty quickly whenever Roman Reigns sneaks up and hits Kevin with a steel chair, throws him into the wall, and makes him pay by laying some brutal shots on Kevin Owens. But after leaving him laying senselessly on the ground, Reigns looks into the camera and begins to address Kevin Owens' family directly. He says that he doesn't think that they've been formally introduced, but he says he's Roman Reigns, the head of the table, your tribal chief, the guy who put the roof over your head and food on your table. He tells his wife to talk some sense into her husband and for his kids to talk some sense into their dad, because if they don't, then he's going to be the one who takes the food off the table. He follows that up by laying one more final knockout kick to the head and tells Kevin Owens' family to have a good night. This was one of my favorite promos by Roman. And I don't know. I mean, is it too early to say that Roman is borderline elite on the mic? I mean, I know that's probably a stretch. A lot of people probably disagree with that, considering where Roman was. And for the longest time, his mic skills were his weakness. But is that not like one of the easiest things you can fix or learn how to do, is just simply speaking into a mic and learning how to do all that, especially if you have the right people teaching you how to do it? When you have Paul Heyman in your corner, I'm sure that that definitely helps. But as far as like comparing that to other things, like, I feel like it'd be a lot easier to learn how to talk on the mic than it would be to be like a superstar athlete in the ring. And Roman Reigns is, I mean, he's pretty good inside the ring. He can go. He wouldn't be on top for as long as he has in the WWE if he wasn't legit in the ring. So that's just that kind of a thought I had. You guys can definitely weigh in if you guys think that I am overrating or underrating Roman Reigns' mic skills, but I think that he has definitely stepped it up pretty big since going into this heel role, as I'm sure most of you know as well. And moving on down the line here, we get a women's tag team match, the Riot Squad versus Natalya and Billie Kay. Liv and Ruby actually pick up a pretty relatively quick win here. From their entrance to the end of the match, Natalya and Billie Kay just don't click as a team. So Natalya's win streak will end at only one, and she's likely back to taking the falls for up-and-coming wrestlers such as Liv. I feel like there's inevitably going to be some cross-branded action in the near future in the women's division as far as the tag team championships go. I mean, they've been on Raw for quite some time now. I don't mind that at all, the titles being on one show. I think that does add some validity to the brand split, similar to back in the early 2000s when only Raw Divas, at the time they were called Divas, got to compete for the women's championship. So SmackDown women really didn't get to do that, which is why that belt is so synonymous with women like Trish Stratus, Lita, Victoria, those women who spent most of their career, Molly Holly, who spent most of their careers on Raw. And Liv and Ruby are just, they're one of the rare women's tag teams that's actually a team. So it makes sense that they get a shot at those titles. But I do expect Shayna and Nia to show up on SmackDown soon. But at the same time, I could expect those titles to really stay in the Raw picture until maybe Royal Rumble time. That's easily where something like that could happen as far as Raw, SmackDown goes. But as you guys know, those tag team titles can float around year-round. So don't be surprised to see Nia and Shayna show up on SmackDown sometime soon. But moving on here next, we get Gable and Otis. And this was kind of weird. They were in like a gym or a weight room doing some type of training. Otis had a blindfold on his head, and Gable starts basically throwing or beating the hell out of him with exercise balls and punching bags. I wasn't really sure what they were doing here, but we do get a little backstage interview with Caleb Braxton and Otis and Gable here. She asks what brought the two of them together, and Gable answers by saying that Otis has been through a lot. Life has knocked him down, and he gets up over and over again. He says that Otis has grit and tenacity, and that's exactly what he looks for in a student for his Alpha Academy that cultivated in his time in the Olympics. Cesaro and Shinsuke come up and ask Gable what he was in the Olympics for building toys in Santa's workshop. And I know that the short jokes are kind of overplayed in the WWE, especially with Chad Gable, but that one did make me laugh, I am going to admit. But Otis starts to get a little worked up over the insults from Shinsuke and Cesaro, but Chad calms him down and says that an alpha never gets rattled. But following a commercial break, we get Otis and Gable versus Shinsuke and Cesaro in a tag match. And Gable and Otis tag in early and often to showcase some pretty good tag team wrestling. Otis was in full control of the match, about to hit his caterpillar. I can't believe I'm actually saying that. To try to close out the match, but Gable told him to tag him in so that he could finish it. And he tried to jump at Cesaro off the top turnbuckle, but he was caught instantly and went for a signature Cesaro spin. Shinsuke was tagged in, hit the Kinshasa, and pinned Gable to win the match. Otis didn't break up the pinfall despite it taking place in his own corner. I don't know if that was on purpose or if that was just a misplacement in the ring where the pinfall was actually supposed to happen, but Otis basically sat there and watched. I mean, he could have probably reached down with his foot and broke up the pinfall, but he did not do that. And Gable already losing a little bit of credibility as a coach by costing his team the match. But after this, they are shown backstage, And Gable says that that was a learning lesson, that he didn't really want to tag in the match, that he was just testing Otis and that Otis failed, that this was all part of the learning experience, and that he's showing Otis what to do by showing him what not to do. This kind of adds a new dynamic that I didn't expect, but also makes it much more interesting because Otis is already showing some hesitation in buying in what Gable is selling, and now it looks more like Gable might just be kind of someone who doesn't know what he's talking about. I don't know. If you guys remember whenever this kind of just started and he just started to recruit Otis, he did have that weird look in his eye after Otis walked away. So I kind of thought about that whenever all this was happening. It made me wonder if Chad Gable does actually have something up his sleeve. We won't know until the coming weeks, but it's definitely something to pay attention to because I think that this program did kind of take a bit of a twist today. It was my impression that they were definitely on the same page and maybe even getting a little bit of a push leading into this night when I saw that they had that match. So for them to lose the way they did and for that to kind of happen, it's definitely just making me intrigued to see how it develops in the weeks going forward. But after this, we get a Baron Corbin backstage interview, and the men in the hoodies are referred to as his associates. He then calls them the Knights of the Lone Wolf, and he threatens the Mysterios that if they continue to mess with him, the consequences will be more than just an eye. And that's pretty much all we got from there. Like I said, there's a lot of things on this SmackDown that didn't necessarily further any storylines, but kind of just walked in place to keep them alive, kept them in your mind, but they didn't further them or develop them anyway. And that is definitely one of them. But coming up here next, we get the main event, which is Carmella and Sasha for the SmackDown Women's Championship. This match definitely had a pay-per-view feel to it. I was kind of bummed out whenever they announced that it was going to be on SmackDown tonight initially, but I did kind of start to warm up to it as the night went on. I was actually getting excited to see Carmella's in-ring work, seeing how it improved, and it definitely did. She was in control of the match for a majority of the beginning, and Sasha actually took a pretty vicious slap to the face and hit her face on the mat pretty hard. Banks didn't get in too much of a groove in this match, and whenever she did seem to get in a little bit of control, the man who we found out was Tommy that brought the champagne out to the ring interfered and pulled Sasha out of the ring. She then turns her attention to him and starts to chase him around and through the ring before Carmella pulls her down by her hair and tries to sneak a pinfall. Sasha eventually snaps and loses the match via disqualification because she refused to stop beating Carmella past the referee's 5 count. After the match was over, Sasha is attacking both Carmella and Tommy, but it was whenever she had Tommy in the bank statement that Carmella took advantage and threw Sasha out of the ring. And she started to beat her pretty bad in front of the announce table. She threw her head in the ice bucket that the champagne was in and then threw the ice all over her. She actually did break a bottle of champagne on her back and then proceeded to spray the champagne everywhere and even took a drink of it of herself. I mean, this was definitely a side of Carmella that we really haven't seen before, but it's definitely what she needed. I think that this tweak to her character is probably done exactly right. I want to see how it continues. Obviously, with this match basically being a disqualification, you can expect that it will still happen at TLC, so we can look forward to that. But the unfortunate side of that is it won't be the first time because they gave it to us on SmackDown. So even though we get basically both, it does make it mean a little bit more or a little bit less. So that's that. We take what we can get, and I will still enjoy that match. I just really wish that they would try to keep the championship matches off of SmackDown and Raw as much as they possibly can and save them for the pay-per-views. I mean, there's enough pay-per-views once every month. It's not that hard just to save them. But that is them and their decisions that they've been making for a very long time. So I'm sure that me saying that is not going to affect their way of thinking at all. But hey, we can all hope, right? But that is pretty much all I got for you for this episode, guys. I do apologize again for not having a top five ready for you because of this dang wedding. Trust me, I do not want to go. I hate weddings. But I have to go because it is for one of my really good friends. So I am going to go. Shout out to Nate Hernandez for getting married. He is one of my best friends. So I am excited to see him have this good day that he's going to remember and get to be there for him. But, you know, I would much rather be doing something else. But he's not going to listen to the show, so he will not know that. So that's just going to be a secret between us. And I appreciate it again, guys, you tuning in and listening to this. A lot of content coming your way again over the weekend. I think Matt has a few more shows dropping over the weekend, so you guys will definitely get your fix. As always, though, I appreciate you listening, and I will talk to you next week.